This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Coming up on Therapy.
We didn't just like not like each other. I mean, we genuinely hated each other.
It's like wedding bells went off. Ding, ding, ding.
Boxing gloves went on.
Yes.
I was thinking about filing for divorce. Mm-hmm. So I sat down with a therapist. I'll never forget. I'm on her couch and I'm complaining about him and I'm telling her all the things that he's doing wrong. And she said, listen, you're on my couch. He's not. If you want to make a better marriage, it starts by making a better you. Most people who get divorced, they do live with regret. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to live with regret.
Hey, senorita, really nice to meet ya.
I was always calculating calories and macros. And when I just calmed the F down, I found my physical ideal. Am I addicted to moderate drinking?
You're very subtly admitting powerlessness and unmanageability right here alive. And I'm proud of you. That's beautiful.
Did you struggle with actual eating disorders?
Anorexia and bulimia.
Wow, thank you for saying
for me,
that.
Katie Couric, nothing screws up a kid more than having a parent on top of that kid all the time.
Kenya Moore.
Before I take a shower, I would always step on a scale. And I saw my daughter starting to do that. Like, she doesn't know how to even read the numbers, but yeah. She saw me doing it.
Actress Melissa Joan Hart.
I remember the first time I was told I could be a movie star if I lost 10 pounds when I weighed 103.
Pinky Cole. Were you high when you came up with the name?
I was very high.
This is Therapy. This week on Therapy, it's relationship experts and best-selling authors Casey and Megan Kasten. They specialize in navigating marital challenges like financial burdens and lack of emotional connection, and they were almost divorced themselves. It's like a wounded healer. You want to learn from someone who's actually been through it. They are married, but they were very close to not being married, and they're very open about that. Speaking of being open about that, you guys know that I am in the middle of a divorce. Papers are not signed yet. So the timing of this coming across my plate is not lost on me. I want to tell them what we're going through. I want to get validation that I'm doing the right thing, or for them to check me if I'm not. I love my estranged husband. I feel like we're getting along much better now that we're just co-parenting. Can our marriage be saved? Am I doing the right thing? Whether you're in a healthy relationship, dating, divorced, they have so many tips and tools that I cannot wait to share with you. Please do me a favor and hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this episode. That way you'll get an alert every time a new Therapy drops. And please consider leaving me a review on Apple Podcasts. And now your weekly dose of Therapy with the Kastens. I am very open. Like, I share all the things, but my husband didn't sign up for that. So it's like, I want to work through it and really tell you guys what's going on. And like, I want you to either validate that I'm doing it, this is what I'm supposed to do based on what you're hearing, or be like, check me and be like, that's bullshit. No, but not get into so many details that like he would feel like I'm putting him out. So I'm in a little bit of it. I want to share, but he didn't sign up for that.
Yes. So, well, I will tell you that if you ever want to reach out to me, I'm happy to meet with you. I take someone and I can get all the information, and it's like putting together a puzzle piece, which is why I'm a really good marriage coach. It's like my extra super strength I have. Oh my God. I will tell someone. That's why I'm not a therapist, because I cannot just sit and validate if I know someone's wrong.
You're like, this is bullshit.
Nope.
Yes. Yep. I like it.
Yeah, oh, Megan. Imagine being a therapist, that, knock that shit off, would you? Yeah.
That's what I want. I need that.
Yeah.
And maybe you are supposed to be here before the papers are signed. We're going to get into it. I don't know if questioning is the right, I guess, yes, I am questioning. I'm not positive. I am the one that filed, but very much like your situation, which I would like you to share, I started working on myself. It did not have the same effect on my ex that it did on your husband, Megan. So I really want to get into that. But I said in the intro, it's like a wounded healer. You want to learn from someone who has been through the thing. You don't want to just have a marriage coach that's never been through a divorce or never had any problems in their marriage. You guys share all the things. I want to talk about your story. I know you met in college. You got married very soon after. And around year three,
it yes. was a little rocky. Was it a slow burn of the 3 years, or did something happen around year three that there was an issue?
It was like the first night.
Oh no.
It was like our honeymoon night.
We fought on our wedding night and it went downhill so fast.
Yeah.
Where we didn't. Oh yeah. Where by year three, we didn't just like not like each other. I mean, we genuinely hated each other. We grew hatred towards one another.
It was like the wedding bells was like the ringside bells for the boxing match. It's like wedding bells went off. Ding, ding, ding.
Boxing gloves went on.
Yeah. So it's like, all right, sweet.
We're both so strong-willed and we're both leaders and we're both stubborn and we both came from bad backgrounds. Like we just, it was
even just this morning, we were talking about what to wear. I was like, I'm wearing this. And she's like, no, you're not. You're not wearing that.
No, I was like, I don't think that's appropriate for a podcast.
It's so
it's we both don't like to be told what to do.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah. But I will say I've changed with that. I would say this guy's still in the process of that. Yes.
Okay. Let's talk about the process. You wanted to do therapy. Casey was against it. So what did you do, Megan?
I was willing, Aaron, to do anything. If it was a marriage retreat, a marriage boot camp, a book, a therapy, you name it, I would have been like, let's do something. And after a while, you know, you just kind of feel like hopeless because your spouse is just so resistant. Huh? It's like, what are you doing? So I was thinking about filing for divorce. And my best friend, who I'm so grateful for her, said, you know, this is a really big decision. And I feel like you need to go talk to somebody about this that's in the field before you just get a divorce and just it completely alter your life. Mm-hmm. So I sat down with a therapist. I'll never forget. I'm on her couch and I'm complaining about him and I'm telling her all the things that he's doing wrong. And she let me go for a good solid 30, 45 minutes. And she stops and she goes, okay, so what are you doing in your marriage? Like, obviously you're not perfect, right? And I said, well, no, I'm not perfect. Okay, what are some things that you're doing wrong or that you want to work on? And it really stopped me in my tracks. And it's what I needed to hear. Mm-hmm. And she kind of let me share a little bit. And she said, listen, you're on my couch. He's not. If you want to make a better marriage, it starts by making a better you. And if you can commit to this process, I can show you how to be a healthy communicator, create boundaries, forgive him, even if he's not apologetic. Like I can show you how to live out your wedding vows. And then let's see what happens. And I'm like, it was intriguing to me. It really, I love being challenged. And so I felt like, okay, I got to try this. Cause she says, listen, most people who get divorced, they do live with regret. It's about 67 to 70% of people. They wish they did therapy. They wish they did marriage 365. They wish they did something different. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to live with regret.
Wow.
So I chose to be all in on my own. And that's what I did.
And Casey, you said you didn't know how to handle your own emotions, let alone your wife's, and you didn't see a healthy marriage. Did I write this down correctly that there are 12 divorces among your parents?
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. So my mom's on her sixth marriage.
Well, you didn't know how to do it.
We had no clue what we were getting into, and we believed all of the cultural sayings about love, like love is all you need. If it's true love, it shouldn't be this hard. You just have to find your soulmate. And all of these things is, you know, like what we just kind of blindly walked into was dating was easy. And then once marriage started, it was a totally different game. And I was completely unprepared for that, even though I had this confidence of like, well, we were good during dating. And marriage is very different because it's so much more immersive. And now you're dealing with somebody side by side. Dating is, you know, you show up for the fun stuff. Mm-hmm. Marriage is actually like brushing teeth together, buying tampons for your wife. Like all of the things like blocking and tackling, like what are we going to do for dinner yet again? It's another night and we didn't make a dinner plan and it's 5 o'clock and we're both hungry, hangry, and we don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And so that there was just like these moments of just being totally responsive to life, not being proactive. It was feeling through each and every moment and the expectations we held over each other, which was, I've got a mommy wound and you're going to be the one that's going to help me through it. Yep. And when you're not there for me, I raged. You weren't there for me because I put such great expectations of who she was supposed to be and how she was supposed to perform as a wife. And when she didn't do that, she was my source of happiness. She let me down. And all I could do, I didn't know how to deal with my anger or like even look in the mirror or process anything. Yeah. I just got angry.
Yeah.
Flipped out.
Yeah.
I have one of those.
And so she was the recipient of that. And so we just spoke words of death over each other for 3 years to the point where we're just like, I hate you. I want nothing to do with you.
We made the biggest mistake of our lives. That's what it felt like.
Yeah.
Wow. And were all kids involved at this point?
No kids yet.
Okay.
Thankfully that was a good part of one of the only pros where we're at. But I would say even our friends were very concerned about how volatile and mean we were towards each other. But it's true. Mm-hmm. Marriage is so mundane. And I think what we really didn't come equipped, you know, two healthy individuals create a healthy marriage. And I was sitting around blaming, pointing fingers, waiting for him to change. And guess what? He was doing the same for me. Mm-hmm. And that's a very disempowering thing to feel. Mm-hmm. Very stuck. Like, well, I can't do anything if you're not on board. And it was my counselor who was the one that was like, that is such a lie. Because the only person you have control over is yourself. And you have 100% control over your behavior, your words, your communication, your attitude, your tone, your nonverbal behavior. Like, you have so much control, more than you know. And that is a message of hope and empowerment. And that really motivated me to be like, you know what? At the end of the day, here's the thing. If Casey wasn't going to change, if he didn't ever want to admit that he was part of the problem,
yes,
I could look myself in the mirror and say, I lived out my wedding vows. I was a rad wife. I did my best to love my husband and love him well. And that's what was motivating to me. And that's what I did for 13 months on my own.
Well, there's the answer. I was like, how long was it until he got on board? And how long? Okay, so 13 months. How long were you willing to give him? Like, you're bettering yourself. Question. Did you think about it? Like, if he does not get his shit together, or were you like, no matter what, I will continue to work on myself. If he comes around, he comes around. Like, what was your mindset?
Yes. It's one of the number one questions people actually ask me. Everybody should have their own timeline. And how you create the timeline is this. First off, you need to look at how long you've been tolerating it. So I had only been married 3 years. So my internal timeline, when I say an internal timeline, I mean, you do not share your timeline with your spouse. This is for you and like with your best friend or a counselor or something like that. Okay. So I was going to give it 2 years. Now, I would tell you it shouldn't be less than 6 months because true change does not happen in a month or two. I mean, there's things that will change within you and you'll see progress, but progress takes time in marriage. And it just, you know, even especially if there's a lot of broken trust. Now, if you've been claiming to leave or threatening divorce, or you've been separated, your time might not be as long. It might not be 2 years or 3 years. It might be 6 months or a year. Now, I would say if you have children, I do believe that your timeline should be at least a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It should be longer. You got to be patient with it. I know it's going to be hard. And I also think it depends on people's tolerance. I know a lot of women. I coached a lady years ago where she's still kind of on her own, but you know what? Her husband's just starting to be open to it. And she's on year five, but she's one of those women that's like, I'm not going to get divorced because we have children. And so I respect her own boundary. I'm not that person though, just so you know, I'm like, I deserve respect and I can only go so long. And so here's the rule, Erin. If it starts impacting your own personal mental health, emotional health, physical health, like if you're getting sick, if you're losing sleep every night, then you have to change your timeline.
Okay.
You know, but what's crazy is like, once you start working on yourself and you start finding balance and you have boundaries, you actually get a lot healthier, and then it impacts you in a good way. It impacts your sleep. It impacts your mental awareness, all of that. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we have been together for 18 years. It will be 9 years married next month. We dated 10 years before we got married.
That's
just real quick. It was, so he was in the NFL when he retired.
Okay.
There was nothing else. And I am so empathetic and compassionate to that journey that your identity is just over. And I was there, and he retired in Washington. So we were in DC, and We had both of our kids before we moved down here, both of our kids, but no help. And he's like, let's move to the, sorry. He's been trying to move to the South, let's say 16 years, like since we were dating. I said, I will absolutely not move to Alabama where he's from. I was completely against it. Seeing how he was after retirement, I said, I will be fine anywhere. Let's move to the South. And he's like, we'll have more help because our, both his parents are down here, his sisters, we moved to the South. And I'm like, he will be happy and I'll be fine anywhere. I was doing pretty well job wise there. And I was like, it's fine. At least I'll have a happy husband. So we've been down here 2.5 years and it's the same, like, it's not the same. It's gotten a little bit more, my mental health is struggling with how he is behaving, and it was happening in front of the kids. And I got to a point where I was like, you need to go, because it was so toxic. Anyone, and this may be against what you guys say, tell me if it is, but anyone that is staying in a toxic situation to keep the family together for the kids, I will just share the story that one night I was losing my mind. I was screaming at him, admittedly, and the kids were in the basement, and my kids are 8 and 5, and they came upstairs with a play set kitchen dinner and said, mommy, we made you this calm down dinner, cause we hear you yelling at daddy. Here's a calm down dinner. And I was like, I said, they're feeling it. And I said, you have to go. And he was not going. It was just like casual. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Then would like go off on me again. And I finally said, do I need to file for divorce for you to leave? And that ended up being what I did. I did it. And then he left. And then I will say, we have never gotten along better. We are co-parenting like champions. I enjoy him in this capacity. And I have the moments of like, we're getting along so well, like maybe we can make it work. But then just the times where he'll just bring over the kids and stay for a little bit and is on his phone with his feet up and like chaos is happening all around. And he's just, and I'm like, this is what reality is. I enjoy him now because we are not together.
You removed a lot of the conflict.
Yes.
The thing is that I would ask, and of course I don't know your husband and you don't have to openly share, but did he actually get the help for why he was the way he was?
No, and will not. He believes that he is everything. He is content with his lifestyle. And I will say this too, and this is a big problem for him. I said I was going to be a stay-at-home mom. I believed I was going to be a stay-at-home mom. That is truly all I wanted. I ended up writing a book and telling my story of overcoming eating disorders and all these things. And it evolved into a show and another book and a nonprofit for girls. And I feel completely aligned with why I'm on this earth and my purpose. I went through the shit. Now I help other kids out of it. And this is what I want to do. And he's kind of like, what is this? Fair. It's fair. Cause he's like, you said you just wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. So now he's kind of like, you have a brand or you're doing book signings or you're going out of town during the week. And he is very much set in the gender roles of the mom should be home with the kids and I should not be going to sign books, and he can't get on board. And I was going to say this way later, but it's coming to me right now. Like, at what point do I choose my life purpose and exactly what I'm supposed to do at the cost of my marriage?
More therapy in a moment. Now this.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Now, back to therapy.
Do I just say I'm not going to do this anymore so that I can save my marriage? Is it selfish? Because I know Casey's like, ask, how's that working out for you? How's what I'm doing right now working out for me? Not great, because now my marriage isn't working. But if I wasn't doing it, I would be completely unfulfilled. I would resent him because I stopped doing what I was doing. So that's where I'm at. Like, at what point do I just say, like, all of his frustration is coming because he has nothing going on and I have all the things going on. He isn't like that, but I feel that I'm supposed to do it. So like, I don't know what to choose.
That's not an easy place. And there's no, like, here's 3 steps that you need to take. Like,
give me the 3 steps. No, there's not, that's not an easy answer. Okay.
I know it's not an easy answer because, you know, matters of the heart are very much so deep within us. Of here you are wrestling with the thing that is really the most important relationship you'll have on this planet, and that is the relationship with the other, your spouse. Meanwhile, living out a calling and a desire to help other people, which is beautiful. Both are beautiful, but now you have to navigate, like, where do I put my time and my energy into this? Now, I wanted to say something that when I work with husbands, I see a lot of husbands putting their confidence in their abilities and their talents, right? Your husband played football. My confidence comes from, I got a chance to play at the top level of my sport. And that build that in those seasons, it is intoxicating when everyone's saying great job to say, this is where my confidence comes from.
Right.
But that is a poor choice to place our confidence in, in our abilities and our talents. Because when someone gets hurt on the field, and their ability to play is gone.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden there's a crisis of conscience of, like, my identity. I don't know what it is placed in. When I lose my job, but my identity and confidence is that I'm going to be a financial provider for my household. That is a poor choice to place our confidence in. Because our confidence comes from a place that's deeper within us. We are human beings, not human doings. Mm-hmm. It's not about what we can do in this life. It's about who we are as a being. And that's the seat, true seat of our confidence, is I am a good person. Now, when you can tether your confidence to these are my intentions in life. I want to be a great husband. I want to be a great father. That is an amazing place to say, I have confidence in that. And of course, in that place, I want to be a great husband, but I do make mistakes. I still can be confident, right?
Yeah.
Because my intention is I still want to love my family well. But if it's my performance as a spouse, again, that's a bad place to put your confidence. And so that was more of a note towards your husband to say, like, where are we placing confidence, right?
And I think with women, we often put our confidence in our looks, appearance, or in our parenting our children as well.
Right.
And so if our kids grow up and make a bad mistake, it's we feel like it's a reflection on how we mothered or how we parented. Yeah. And that's the same thing. Like we can do this in our careers too. Women do this with their careers, is they love it and they're good at it. But then, like, if they get laid off or fired, or whatever, they have to take a leave of absence, or COVID. When COVID happened, a lot of people went, crap, like, that my identity was in my ability to work or do this thing at my job. And now that's taken from me. What do I have left? And then that's why we saw the depression rates go so high up. Also, we were in isolation, and that's not good either. But I think that it's very important to understand that you have to know your strengths, your own values. And my thought would be, I have a feeling that everything that your husband's going through, it actually has nothing to do with you.
Mm. It just comes out at me. Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're safe. You're the safe person. You know, you're the wife, you're the mother of his kids. I'm not saying he should do that, but I have a feeling he lost his identity. He doesn't have it. It was 100% obviously in his. Yes. Now he's upset because he's seeing you have more stability and work.
Yes.
And there's a jealousy there. There's, like, I want what Aaron has. Like, I want,
but he
that.
Could.
I don't have that. And when, he could
right then go now, coach. I'm like, be better. Like, dude, Casey saw you getting better and he was inspired to be better. Like, he
but
could.
Do you know what motivates people?
Hmm.
Two things motivate people. Pain.
Oh,
pain. Pain. Unfortunately, when do people go to marriage counseling? They don't go when they're happy. They go when it hurts. Mm-hmm. They go when there was infidelity. They go when there's a threat of separation.
Yeah.
When it's pain. Pain motivates people. We don't go to the doctor when we're healthy. We should. But most people wait and they're like, oh, I've had this stomach pain for 6 months. Maybe I should finally go to the doctor, right? Like, it's true. Pain motivates us. You jump on the scale, you don't like your weight, or you're like, oh, these pants don't fit anymore. It's the pain of the, like, oh, I don't like my body, that's going to motivate you to go to the gym. Now, there are people who are motivated and self-motivated. And I will tell you, I'm one of those people. But did you know it's only about, like, 10-15% of people that are like that?
So what's the second motivation?
No, the self-motivation.
Pain. Oh, change is pain, like, and self-motivation.
Well, self-motivation comes from, I don't want to fail. I don't want to suffer the pain. So I'm actually motivated by not wanting pain. So we're completely opposite. Casey is motivated by pain.
I have to smash into the guardrails of life pretty hard. And then I'm like, okay, there you go.
I don't think he feels it. He doesn't even feel the pain. He's been in his sad little house for 10 months. And I'm like, honestly, I'm like, he's going to be like 3 months and he's going to be like, this is ridiculous, but that didn't happen. And he is just so content in this new life that we have right now that like, he doesn't think anything's wrong. And he doesn't want to work on it. It would be easier. Sorry.
He's avoiding and he's numbing out.
And he would, Megan, we are about to sign these papers. Like it is, he would just rather almost, it sounds ridiculous, but just sign it to not have to do the work. Yeah. And
because
that's so disappointing.
Courage is doing what's right over what's easy. Doing what's easy is signing the papers.
Yes, it's easy.
Men and women
who are
actually courageous. Yeah, the courageous choice is, I need to wake up. My wife left me.
Right.
My kids are probably feeling this and I don't want to damage my kids.
My kids ask us.
I should probably figure this out.
Yes. I know they're saying it to him. They're like, can we just have one house? And I'm like, buddy, remember when it was one house, we didn't want anybody yelling. And we told them together. And I said, mommy wants to be the best mommy she can be. Daddy wants to be the best daddy he can be. So we're going to be to have different houses, but we're still going to be a family. And they are handling it. I mean, they have, as long as you tell them how many nights with daddy, they're not, I mean, once in a while, my son will ask for one house, but I assume he's asking him too. And what does he say? This is what he says. He's like, you filed, like almost like he's hurt. And I can't tell you the amount of times I have written out, I have taught him, be like, I had no choice. And I did what you did. You'd say it doesn't take two people to fix a marriage. It starts with one person. I realize I am 1,000 miles an hour. He is very like slow. And so I can come off and it's like almost jarring to him. I am on Zoloft for my all over the placeness. I am going to therapy. I am working on myself. I'm going so far to, I'm studying genetic mutation, finding where I have breaks in my genetic code. And I need to supplement with like magnesium, or I found out I don't get folate and that affects my brain. Like I am doing the work, but it makes it even worse to me that he won't. Like I am trying. I'm not saying I am great. You need to work on yourself. I've been working on myself for months. I don't know if I have 13 months in me to see if he comes around.
Can I ask you a hard question?
Ask me all the questions. I will tell you anything.
Okay. When's the last time you went up to him?
Okay.
And you gave a really sincere apology and validated some pain that he shared with you.
That's a fabulous question and very interesting. He has just told me something that he has been hurt by and holding resentment from when we were dating. Like pre-marriage, and to the point that I was like, why did you marry me? And I received it very well and was like, I feel awful. I can't believe you're just telling me. I had no idea. I totally understand where you're coming from. I am so sorry. But then at the same time, I can't be punished. He won't let go of resentment and he chooses not to work through it. And how long do I have to just take it? Because he's valid in what he's saying, but if you're never going to work on it, I can't just take this for the rest of my life if you won't work through this resentment.
But do you think, Casey, that he knows how to work through his resentment?
No,
exactly. I would say, when we do these 2-day intensive experiences where we're working with couples that are very similar situation where they bring divorce papers, cause this is kind of their final checklist, or they're working through a fair recovery. It's deep, deep pain.
Mm.
I mean, 100% of the time, everything stems from a moment in their journey together where someone was hurt.
Yes.
Either didn't express the hurt, just held it inside and harbored this place of unforgiveness.
Yes.
And that becomes the seed by which the garden becomes covered with weeds.
Casey?
And it chokes out all the life. It chokes out every fruit and everything.
That is, his analogy was, it was like the Twin Towers. Cause I said, I am doing this brand and you don't want to see me succeed. He's like, I don't love it. But he's like, that's not it. I was already hit. He goes, it was like the second plane.
And I was like, when were you hit? He goes, this was just like the last thing. And I was barely standing. And then he says something that happened so long ago. And I knew it was a hard time, but he didn't feel like I stood up for him and really fought for him. And my heart, I was just like, you've never said that. And then you engaged me, you proposed to me and we got married, still holding on to all that. Like, I can't, why did he marry me? Like, I feel
well, we awful. Just,
he didn't even, we I didn't can know. Guarantee you, but I guarantee you, he didn't know he had resentment. And he, most people try to go, I'm going to get over it. We just need time. This is one of those marriage myths that Casey was talking about earlier, is there's a lot of myths out there. There's a lot of like, oh, if you should, you know, you love each other, it's not hard work. That's such a bunch of baloney. That's what a lot of people think, is we have issues, but we just need to like get married. We just need to figure it out.
Or we should have a kid and it should solve everything.
It'll solve everything.
Or two.
We just need to move and it'll solve everything. Like,
yeah.
But it's actually like the skill sets and the techniques that we teach couples at Marriage 365. Like, you need a marriage tool belt. Like, that's literally like, you guys have the belt, but you don't have the tools on the belt. Right.
Yeah.
And yes. So he doesn't know how. I guarantee it. I would bet money on it. He has no clue how to let go of resentment. He does not want to live with resentment. He just doesn't know how to.
We've worked with many professional athletes, and in that culture, there's a very, very, I would say everything that's in that culture works against having deep and meaningful relationships. We worked with one athlete that the exact same situation, they weren't really compatible together, but they decided to get married anyways. And then all of these issues come out and you know, he's like, I'm so confused. Why can't she do this? Why can't she do that? But the whole premise for the relationship was built off some pain, some hurt that they caused each other. But his thought was, well, let's just get married and that's going to solve everything. And it doesn't. And I'm going to say, you know, I grew up in a, I'd say a very chaotic childhood, a lot of trauma, And there's a lot of stories. I thought, well, I'm now an adult. I should be able to handle a relationship like this.
Mm-hmm.
And the shame of not being able to communicate well, not know how to process things, that's really embarrassing for a guy. So I never raised my hand.
Yeah.
And the time for me, the aha moment was this.
Mm.
I can see us in our apartment. Megan's in the middle of dinner or something like that. And I walk up to her. I'm steam coming out of my ears.
Yeah.
I am so pissed off at her. And I'm like about ready to throw a left jab at her, right? Emotionally.
Not really. Emotionally.
Emotionally.
Got it.
And she sees this coming a mile away. And she says, you know what? I can tell that you're so upset right now. And I really want to hear you. But let's do this in a calm and meaningful way. So why don't you go outside, take a walk, come back, and I'm going to be ready, willing to listen to what you have to say.
Boundaries right there. Boundaries.
I was caught so off guard. I was like, who is this?
Right.
And it was,
she had a tool
so
in her tool
to
belt. She got
she had a tool in a tool belt.
It was like,
she
bam.
Put her first boundary up.
Yeah.
And I was like,
and I stayed calm, which normally I would fight back.
I lost my sparring partner, and it was so evident to me at that moment who was the unhealthy spouse.
Yeah.
Here's the interesting thing is, because Megan and I are so competitive.
Okay.
I didn't want to be the unhealthy spouse. I was like, oh, I want to be the healthy one. I'm going to be more healthy than you.
Yes.
And that kind of stirred into me like this, like thing of, we both realized our parents just left their spouses when things got hard. And we're like, that caused so much trauma to us.
I know.
Because here's something we don't talk about in culture. Divorce is capital T trauma.
It is. Yeah.
It's trauma for spouses. Mm. It's trauma for our kids.
Yeah.
They don't have a safety net any longer because now there's two homes, like you said.
Yeah.
And when I, you know, one of the things that motivates me and energizes me for Marriage 365 all the time is this nightmare that I had growing up where a train was coming. I'm trying to save my parents. We're in a bus. We're stuck on the tracks. And I could never get to them in time to save them.
Yeah.
And it was this constant nightmare that just visited me, of me feeling like I can't bring my parents back together. And that's all I wanted. because they're my superhero, you know?
Yes.
And that to me, I never want any child to ever have to go through a moment where they are feeling that kind of nightmare situation. And in a lot of ways, I'd say Marriage 365 is not about marriages. It's about the kids of these marriages, because they're our next generation. And we have to be the adults in the room to step up and say, I'm going to own my shit.
Yes.
I'm going to own my story. I'm going to own my and process through my emotions. I'm going to try to communicate in a healthy way. And I want to be sit in a place of confidence. You know, one of the scariest quotes I've ever heard was Henry David Thoreau says, many men live lives of quiet desperation, meaning they're desperate inside. And he says, and they die with their song still inside them.
Oh,
yeah. How sad is that? That many men have lost the potential of becoming who they are meant to be, to step into their families with authentic masculine energy. Not what our culture's passing out to us.
That's what I was going to say. It's weakness. He'll look weak. I know what it is. And he only understood that, like, vulnerable guys, that is so attractive to me. Like at church,
I'm already turned on just you talking about it.
He's not being this macho guy he thinks he is, because I know he's feeling things and he won't show it.
You know why he won't show it?
Hmm? Because he doesn't know how.
Why he won't show it?
Because he doesn't know how.
We are failing men. I it's not an excuse, by the way, to your husband or to anybody listening.
I love him. Like, I don't want you to feel like I
is the ex.
Yeah.
Oh, I believe you. But it is the explanation, and it's very important to understand actually why someone's doing something, because the why is the explanation that we can actually then move into compassion. Compassion is like, oh wow, like we know that hurt people hurt people. Your husband's hurting right now. So in return, the reality is he's hurting people. Now, he's not waking up going, how do I hurt my kids, my marriage, and my wife? Like, I know he's not doing that, right? Like, he's not a sociopath.
No, he's waking up thinking he's fine, though, Megan. Like, I believe that he believes his life, he's like, I'm just a simple guy. Like, the light is off. When he was coaching, because he coached college and high school, the light was on and the kid, he was thriving, and it was so like obvious that this is his calling. And he talks very much like, I already lived. He's 46. Like, he's done. It's almost like it can't come from me. There's when Casey was just saying that, you were like, you know what, why don't you take a second? That would not have gone over well. Like, don't tell me to take a second. I know that I can't. I am always on eggshells. Like, how do I say this so that he won't be reactive and defensive? And nothing that I say is heard as anything except me nagging him or controlling him. So maybe it's my delivery. That. What?
No, there's a reason. Whether your delivery is healthy or not, it's what we do with marriage intensives. There's a lack of healing and true humility, and like the understanding of what happens with hurt. So like, just FYI, and then you can chime in, but every couple has a fight cycle, right? Like, you bring up an issue, he gets defensive, then you get an argument. Sometimes it's, you know, husband brings up an issue, wife gives silent treatment. Like, everybody has their own fight cycle, right? The reality is that the deep pains that Casey was talking about earlier, which you guys have a lot of them, they're festered deep down. It doesn't matter actually how many tools you have in your tool belt until you deal with the pain. And here's what I would challenge you, Aaron, to think through. If you end up divorcing, you're still going to have to be great co-parents, right?
Yeah.
And so you don't want to be co-parents that are harboring pain. This is why, like, you guys are ripe for a marriage intensive or something like that, because it's couples in crisis. You're in crisis mode, but it takes a 1 hour a week therapy session. It's not going to be effective. Oh, no. That's not enough for you guys. It's not enough. Sadly, it's not enough for most couples that are hurting. You can't do something in 1 hour once a week, or even 2 hours twice a week, you know? And so maybe you can extend on like it's like the magic sauce with like the four-step apology. And when you learn like how to actually forgive and let go, and when you learn how to rebuild trust with one another, we call it the magic sauce for a reason.
Yeah. I keep thinking about insecurities. Mm-hmm. we work with a lot of high net worth individuals, successful athletes. And I go back to, it's crazy to sit in the room with someone who has achieved such great accomplishments.
Yeah.
Top of their game, you know, getting multiple $1 million contracts and getting accolades. And yet when you just dig a little deeper, you understand the level of insecurity that they hold. And again, because I believe that they are, and what I work with husbands is I'm trying to get them to get, stop putting your confidence in this bucket. It's got a hole in the bottom. It's not going to hold anything. But when you start to understand, like, I have a vision for my life, and we have to start somewhere. So we start on your deathbed.
Mm. More therapy in a moment. Now this.
Guys, I have found the magic. And who would I be to not share the magic with my loyal Therapy listeners? I have been using Rejuvelift Beauty, a tightening clay that you tap wherever you need it. I use it on the little 11s between my eyebrows, the bags under my eyes, my crow's feet. You tap it, you sit for 4 minutes, and the results last for up to 7 hours. If you have a girl's night, a work event, a date night, make Rejuvelift the first step in your beauty routine. It goes on before makeup. It lasts for up to 7 hours. It is magic. And right now, Therapy listeners get 20% off at rejuvelift.beauty.com using code Therapy. Therinpy, 20% off, rejuveliftbeauty.com. That's Rejuvelift. Beauty.com. You're welcome.
Now back to Therapy.
Do we want to say, I want to be all alone, and I'm so grateful for all those nights I spent drunk and all those nights I binge watched a show because that brought me satisfaction? Or do you picture yourself on your deathbed surrounded by the people that you've invested in, by your spouse, by your kids, that are weeping because they're broken hearted that you are going to say goodbye, because you've made a deep and meaningful impact in their lives?
Yeah.
Which kind of ending do you want to your story? And that's where, once we get that, then we can start to back into that story to say, well, okay, hope starts with this, a shared vision. If you want that end, happy ending, then you've got to start to figure out, like, this is where we want to end up at. Okay. Now we've got a common vision, a common goal to get towards that. Now we need some action steps. How do we get to that place?
And we always start with healing. It's the first step we do after we have the vision. Cause I guarantee you, both you and your husband, the ideal is we figure this out, we heal, we make it work, and we have a great happily ever after. I mean, we don't meet a lot of couples that don't want that.
But is it a second vision that we need to establish? Because wasn't marriage that we have the vision that we will be together forever? Like, we need to reestablish a new vision, is what you're saying? Like, it's shouldn't kind of we like, be?
I think a lot of couples, including us, when we got married, we guessed, we're promising on what we're going to vow, but we don't really know what it's going to be like.
Yeah. I think the whim, we kind of go off on the whim, like, okay, like I just feel in love, right? I feel in love, and I just want to cultivate this feeling of love. It's funny. So we are working on a book right now.
Yes.
And we're talking about how there are five killers of modern love. And one of them is the fact that we are so in love with love, which is actually just a representation of how selfish we are. Because I love how love makes me feel. And you know what? When I don't feel in love, that's your fault.
Right.
And yeah, that is horrible. And that is the wrong, again, a wrong expectation of what love and marriage is supposed to feel like. We are meant to cultivate our own happiness. And you know what? Then we get to share that with each other. That is where is true happiness happens and joy, is that we're sharing that with each other. But I'm not dependent on Megan to make me happy. All that to say, you're asking for, well, do we need a new vision? Yeah. Because probably whatever you guys had was based off of us responding in the moment. Mm-hmm. And what I love doing about, you know, this whole idea, If you want to make a better marriage, it starts by making a better you. That is about being proactive. And that is about saying, I want to map out and plan my future. I'm not going to just be responsive, because the alternative is this. If I want a better marriage, I have to wait until Megan gets on board. Think about how disempowering that is. That means I just sit in here and go, well, I guess I can't work on my marriage because Megan won't join me.
Which is what we did for years.
You're trapped now.
I hear you. I hear you. And I am working on myself. And it's like he sees it as vain. Like, I'm just worried about myself. I'm going to therapy. I know how I can be. And I know that things that I do and personality traits that I have that are not conducive to a healthy marriage. Yeah. So I am doing my part.
Well, that's why I asked you, when's the last time that you really gave a heartfelt apology?
2 weeks
that's
ago.
That's actually part 2 weeks ago. And how did he respond to that?
Just see how I'm not a mental health professional, but I think there's a lot happening that he's in left field.
But what did he do?
He's just like, yeah, thank you. Like, it's just nothing is hitting. He's somewhere else. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then part of me is like, how do I walk away from this man that I've loved for 18 years and the father of my kids while he is struggling? But I cannot get him to get hard.
Well, and I'll bring this up, Erin, because I think this is like one of those things that this is actually one of the steps I walk people through when they're working on their marriage by themselves, is you go give unsolicited, meaning someone didn't ask for it, right? Apologies. And I remember Casey telling me for years, you're so controlling. And because I was insecure, I would say, no, I'm not. But then as I started getting help, processing my childhood baggage, all that stuff, I was like, oh, actually I am controlling. Yes. So I would randomly go up to him and I'm like, you know what? You've been telling me for years that I'm controlling, and you know what? You're right. And his jaw like literally dropped. He was like, what? And I'm like, and I moved into a four-step apology, which is so validating. And the first step is saying, I'm sorry for, and you insert action plus feeling. We often apologize only for our action. Like, I'm sorry I was late. I'm sorry I yelled. I'm sorry I didn't stand up for you. But the most important part of an apology is actually the feeling. What happened in your spouse when you did that action? Right. Whether you meant to or not. So I'm so sorry that I've been this controlling for so many years, making you feel, well, how did it make you feel? I think I said disrespected, but how does it make you feel when I'm controlling?
Anxious, stressed, not important.
I get it.
Like a third child.
There you go. So I'm sorry for being controlling, making you feel anxious and like you're my third child. And then the second step is I was wrong. Now you're taking accountability. Like I don't want you to ever feel that way. And that's wrong of me to do something that would make you feel that way, whether I knew I was doing it or not.
Yeah.
The third step is the step that most couples miss. And this is what you're probably going to like love and what most people love. This is my favorite step is, how can I make this better? Mm. So I've been controlling. And now this is a brainstorming conversation you get to have together as a couple. And you talk about, okay, well, you know, I noticed you're really controlling when it comes to the household chores. Like, is there a way that we could figure this out? And you just start brainstorming. And we always say there's no like bad answers in the step three. You just have to try to come up with as many ideas on how to make sure that the behavior changes, because most couples apologize and say, I'm really sorry, but then there's no behavior change. And then the apology becomes meaningless. So step one's validating their pain.
Mm-hmm.
Step two is taking accountability, which really helps the spouse that's hurting to go, damn, they're not making excuses. They're not like trying to explain themselves. They're just holding themselves accountable.
And can I just say something on that? The second step, a lot of people struggle with making that apology because they're like, well, I didn't mean to. Right. Yeah. But we call the law of unintended consequences is that, you know what? Sometimes I haven't had my coffee in the morning and I'm going to snap. Sometimes I'm going to I don't even recognize that I'm hurting you.
Yeah.
Right. At that moment, but there's still an accountability to go. Even so, remember, an apology is not actually for yourself. It's actually for your partner. So it doesn't even matter what you intended. You just need to apologize.
Yeah. We can't explain in an apology. We can explain maybe later, like the next day, if we feel
right.
Like
just say it.
Because once you try to explain yourself, it sounds like you're making an excuse, right?
Yeah, totally.
But step three is really how are we actually going to change this so that we don't fight about this anymore? And that, if the couples can figure that out, oh, it's the most beautiful thing. And then step four is.
I want to do the step four.
Yeah, do it.
It's actually asking for forgiveness.
Oh.
It's really inviting your spouse to say.
Do you forgive me?
Like, will you forgive me? Yeah.
Will you forgive me?
Will you forgive me? It's inviting your spouse to say, hey, I know I hurt you and I don't want you to carry that pain anymore. Because when we live in unforgiveness, what we do is we're carrying the pains of the past, almost like a prism or set of glasses, and we're carrying them into the present. So the pains of the past now impact how we see the present. And so a lot of times spouses carry these hurts and hurts that, you know, have been stacked up over years,
as you know,
and now they're seeing their spouse, not through the eyes of love, but the eyes of pain.
Yes.
And I'm hurting.
Yes.
And then now we're in the place of hurt people.
Hurt people. And
That's the spouse,
is like, what did I do? Why are you so mad? Because you just think it's the thing in the moment. You're like, I'm not even doing anything, but there's so much beneath that they may not be sharing. So it just, it gives clarity. So maybe I was going to ask, like, if you have someone that's resistant to a marriage intensive or just to therapy, maybe try unsolicited apologies to kind of like get the wall down. Other steps to kind of.
Yeah, it breaks down defenses. I would say another great thing to do would be what we call the 60-second blessing.
I wrote that next. It's,
yes. it's one of those things that.
My favorite.
Yeah, it is. We were talking about it yesterday and how powerful words can be, right? Because words can hurt or words can heal.
Yeah.
And I think we always challenge people, like, if you can do the 60-second blessing to your spouse for 30 days, or even just try 7 days, even if they don't respond the way you'd like them to respond, you'll see softened hearts.
So the 60-second blessing is where you spend 60 seconds just speaking words of life, words of affirmation, telling your spouse how proud you are of them, telling them all the characteristics you love them. I love how organized you are. I love your green eyes. I love your butt. I love that we get to play together, and just showering them with these words that are positive, because, you know, there's the Jewish proverb that says that words have the power to give life or to give death. Now think about that. This instrument right here is your superpower. Yeah, I'm pointing to my mouth. You can speak relational health into your marriage. You can speak health into it just by using your words wisely. You can speak death, disconnection, destruction by using your words sharply. It is crazy how instrumental the words we choose over our partners are. Now, if we are going to be responsive in a relationship, then you know what? Yeah, you're going to find that majority of your words are just responding out of that hurt or that pain. Mm. But if we want to be proactive, we want to actually design the life that we want, we must be proactive. And that means being intentional with saying, you know what, for the next 60 seconds, I'm just going to shower you with words and affirmation. Now, if you're in a place where it's just a one-sided thing, here's my challenge. Is what I would say is text them to your spouse and say, hey, I wanted to take a moment to tell you, dot, dot, dot.
These are, you're a great dad and a great provider. Now,
And don't say anything else other than that.
And don't expect a response.
Yeah. Don't expect
a response. I would like to keep the bar low. Now, ideally in a marriage, like where Casey and I are happy overall, I start doing the 60-second blessing and then it's his turn. And then he does it to me. You know, it's a daily habit. It's also a great habit to do with your children.
Before school.
Messages they get with our children. Like, our children are told they're not enough. They're not smart enough. They're all these things. And so it's really great to do for your children. Children love it. We did it as a family last night. And
Sunday supper is our time to do like a family business meeting. Yeah. And we actually said, okay, we're going to go around the table and we're all going to affirm, you know, our daughter or our son.
And we have teenagers and you'd be shocked. Like, they light up. Like, they're so, it just feels good, you know?
Yeah.
I was told I was a good driving instructor.
You were told you were a good driving instructor.
And then she got best friend from my daughter. I'm like, wait, what?
Oh my God. If my daughter said that to me, nobody could tell me anything the rest of the week.
She's 16 and it's been, I've actually really loved the high school years. I don't like junior high. I will be honest. I hate junior high. We both hate junior high. We've loved the high school years.
Yeah.
It's been great. Like overall, I mean, there's still, it's an emotional roller coaster, but
And I want to, can I just affirm you publicly in front of everyone?
Please.
I love how you actually have been such a good, like, person to, like, to walk through. My daughter just started dating, well, dated somebody for a year and then went through the process of breaking up, and you became a really safe place for her. And you processed with her, and you, I mean, her level of emotional intelligence just through this process with you walking through, just, I mean, you leveled up her game. So, so huge.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Gosh, this is lovely. Sign me
Where's
up
my
for
affirmation?
This. Yeah. He would like you to
I'm
go.
Just kidding.
He is expecting you.
You were really good. You were really good in the bedroom last night.
And you win.
And
I want this. I want happy, fun banter.
Let me tell you something. I think that you've narrowed your choices down, to be honest with you, too little. I think you actually had another choice, and I think that you didn't even know it was there.
What is it?
You felt like the only way to get him out was to file divorce. But boundaries, and I'm sure you've done some work in therapy about boundaries.
Yes.
It's a big topic. But there is actually a really healthy, creative way to create boundaries where, right, we teach people how to treat us. Like you allowed your husband to do XYZ for so many
years.
Well, now, like, so it takes time. Like, boundaries don't happen overnight.
Yeah.
Megan, that's what happened. I taught him how to treat me. And now I'm like, you don't help me. So yeah, but and now he's like, well, I never helped you before. Now all of a sudden you have this new thing to help me. I taught him how to treat me. Go ahead.
So one of the things that we're huge advocates for is actually a healthy separation. Mm-hmm. We do not believe that separation is actually the step before divorce. Like, if you're just going to get divorced, because separation confuses people. They're like, well, wait, I thought like maybe there was still a chance left for us. But we've seen so many couples go through a healthy separation. And what that means, it's like a restart for your marriage. Okay, we weren't doing marriage well. We're removing the toxicity from living together, like the fighting and the arguing, because that's not good for anybody, not good for the kids, right? Like you said. But in that time of separation, there's a plan. Mm-hmm. We both have steps. And then you say, are you willing to try this? And before you say no, can you educate yourself and just look at that? You have to give it a shot and try it. And I don't know if you did anything like that, but if you actually had a plan listed out, not just we need a plan, like here's the steps I think we should follow. Here's the steps that Marriage 365 gives.
Okay.
Because it becomes too overwhelming if it's just like, well, we just need a plan.
Or just
and
therapy.
And I'm
going to
say,
well, so you need to go to therapy. Here. He's going to be like, oh, whatever. But if you say, here is the therapist, this it meets on Tuesday, like give him a plan. Like an actual
plan.
Yeah.
I mean, we have five steps.
I want to,
we would give somebody, that's why I'm like, we would guide someone through that. And so they would know, but okay. What are you going to say?
Well, let's talk about therapy for a second. Cause probably a lot of people are like, well, okay. So then I'll just tell my spouse they need to go to therapy. And I think therapy is amazing on an individual level.
Okay.
But there is a lot to be said about couples therapy and it's lack of success. It's got a 13 to 18% success rate. And there's actually a dirty little secret that therapists know about, that couples therapy is just the divorce waiting room. And that's usually because couples come in way too late. Now you've got one person, you've got a couple talking to one person. That's 3 points. That makes a triangle.
Yep.
And they're going to feel triangulated. And one spouse is going to complain. And the as soon as that therapist validates that pain, that other spouse is like, this is a setup. This is a setup. Now, therapists are not trained on how to give action steps to couples. They're meant to say, well, Megan, what do you think you should do next?
I'm like, if I knew what to do, I wouldn't be here.
and I was raised in a home where my mom's been married 6 times. Nobody taught me what to do next. So what couples need is action steps. Now, I think it's totally important. You're talking about processing childhood wounds and things like that. But when it comes to marriage, the most important thing that couples need is an action plan. They need to know what they need to do
to fix it.
Now, going off on yourself and processing, this is what my dad did to me. Here's the lack of emotional stability. Here's where my confidence is off. that's great. And that is really helpful with a therapist.
And one-on-one.
But yeah. I will tell you right now, couples therapy is not your magic pill. No, it is right. not the magic pill. And there's so much science out there that shows couples just need to know what to do next.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where the passion for Megan and I come in, and the tools and the resources we've created at Marriage 365, which I know sounds a little self-indulgent right now, but
no, I want to know about it. It's not.
Yeah. Is I just need to know what to do. Like, for example, this four-step apology, like just tell me what to do in that apology. Yeah. And then we're like, now go do that. Go do the 60-second blessing.
Oh my gosh.
Go. Here's how do you communicate a boundary. Just do it.
So we actually model it. We teach it. We explain and walk through it. Why you do this, why you say that, when your spouse doesn't respond the way, like we walk you through all that, because that's what happens with couples therapy. They go, well, you guys need to go home and make boundaries. Okay. If you've never made a boundary, mm-hmm. how would you know how to create a boundary? That's why like therapists aren't teaching people how to do that. Not, I mean, and I don't want to knock all therapists because honestly, like 2 years ago, we went to therapy, we were stuck, but see, therapy's great for couples, for those listening that only have one or two issues. You don't want to go to marriage therapy if you have 5, 6, 7, 8 issues,
years or you're in crisis.
It's not set up to for success, and it is a big fat waste of money and time. And I would never want anyone to waste their money and time. You would need something like a marriage bootcamp, a marriage intensive. And there are therapists who offer that in different programs. Of course, we offer that at Marriage 365 as well.
Yeah. We're marriage coaches. And here's what I always tell my athletes. I said, listen, we only coach all-star teams. All right. I'm not in D5, you know, fifth position. Okay. I'm in D1. Top of the game, undefeated. And that's, I think that Megan and I probably show, couples have to be ready for us because we bring a lot of intensity and we drive a hard bargain. Like either you're going to do the work or we're not going to work with you. That's like, as soon as somebody's like, well, we got your action plan, we're not working with you, we fire them immediately. Cause I'm like, yeah. I'm not coaching Little League here. I am a top elite people that are hungry, people that are ready to work on their relationship. And when someone is desperate enough and they're like, you know what? I'm hungry for that win, but I'm also humble enough to receive instruction and trust you as my coach. Those are the teams that I'm like, winners right there.
Yes. And everybody needs a coach. Everybody, right? Every athlete needs a coach. They don't just go off by themselves. I mean, you know, and a coach is definitely a really great way because coaches tend to give more action plans. There's accountability. But I, you know, I say, Aaron, if I was in your shoes, I would say, you know, hey, I worked with this couple. I mean, it doesn't even have to be us, by the way. I'm just giving an example. But, you know, I really think that this is fixable. I think, you know, we got to try it. We got to try it for the sake of our kids. We got to try it so we don't both regret. And I'm willing to do X, Y, Z and create a plan with you. Are you willing? And have that heartfelt conversation, you know, and say, and I don't even want your response right now. I actually want you to take a week. I really want you to think about it, pray about it, journal. Like, I don't want it to be an impulsive thought. I want you to really go, okay, like this is it, you know?
Okay, Aaron, I want to just end with this, but I really want to talk to the spouse that's feeling hopeless and just talk about really, how do you rebuild hope in yourself? How do you rebuild hope in your relationship? And there's kind of three elements to hope. And the first one is having some like sort of goal. Like, I want to end up here. Okay. We talked about like the deathbed scenario. Like, okay, I want to end up in a place where at the end of my life, I'm surrounded by people that I've made deep and meaningful impact in their life. I've had significance in their life. Okay. That's one. Number two is having an action plan. When you have an action plan on how to get there, that's when you can start to feel like, okay, so now I have the map, right? Now I see the mountaintop. Now I see the map. Here's the trail I'm going to take to get there. And then the third element is actually taking the first step. Because once you have that action plan and you know, this is the direction I need to go, then you can move from a place of hopelessness into a place of hope. And it doesn't require two. Just like what Megan was kind of giving is just action steps of like, I can apologize. I can own the things I can take responsibility for and be accountable for. And no matter what my spouse does, I can take confidence in that. Because see, again, now you're owning your intentions. That is the seat of confidence. I'm going to be, my being is going to be responsible and accountable for my actions. And that is my intention, is I want to live a life where I am in control of me and my responses. Yeah. And that's the place where couples start to move from a place of like, I'm hopeless, to I have hope because I'm becoming the very best version of myself. And that is the only thing that I have control over.
And let's say your husband comes over and you're doing family time and you see him, oh, there he goes again. He's on his phone, right?
Yes.
And you get a little triggered, right?
Yes.
Rather than allowing yourself to respond when you're triggered, which no good comes from that.
Right.
You actually see him through the eyes of compassion, because now you're living in forgiveness and you're like, you know what? Hurt people hurt people. He's numbing out. No one ever equipped my poor husband to navigate his emotions, or God forbid, talk about them. And you know what? Like, I feel bad for him. Like, I don't want to say like pity, but that was what, that's what softened my heart towards my husband, was his mom was married 6 times. Like, this poor guy had no, and then Hollywood and our media, they don't equip men on how to be healthy. Mm-hmm. So then we want men to be healthy, and then we're frustrated. And I'm sorry, I'm not, again, I don't want to excuse men,
right,
but it does help you be compassionate. That would... And as humans, we need to be compassionate people, right? Yes. It's like watching your children. You said they're 8 and 5, 8 and 3?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 8 and 5.
You know, we allow children to fail, make mistakes. Why? Because they're children. Why are we not allowed to fail and make mistakes as adults? You know, like, we're really hard on adults. Mm. And by the way, I'm raising my hand to say I'm first in line about being really hard on myself and hard on others. But I think we need to say and look at the whole person and the whole picture to say, your husband has a story before he even met you, right? And I'm sure you know a lot of that story. And then the impact of being in the limelight, excuse me, and the stresses of a job, and then losing your calm, like all these things you said, it makes up what your husband's struggling with. And how you show up and how you see him in this season can actually really help heal him.
More therapy in a moment. Now this. Now, back to therapy.
If he just said, I don't know what's going on, like, I'm struggling, I would take his hand, I would bring him back home, I would go with him, and he won't. He was raised to never show any vulnerability. Like, he won't. Mm. If he did, I would take him back in a second. Like, that's, but he I'm good.
And like, he won't for two reasons. He won't. It sounds like there's pride, right? There's pride there in the heart of love. Like,
yes.
I'm a guy. No, no. The second is he doesn't know how. Casey,
well, how can I welcome him to? Like, how can I be like, how do you get him?
Well, I think
he doesn't know how. When you model it.
Yeah.
And model it with your children, model it with him. Like, you, that's what I'm saying. If you respond, that's what I started doing with Casey, is he didn't know how to apologize.
Right.
I learned how to apologize. He started going, well, that feels good. Cause that's what I was saying. Like, when I apologize for being controlling, how did that make you feel? You were like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Right. And he's like, well, I want to feel amazing again. So then 2 weeks later, and I apologized for like yelling at him again. I had never done that in a healthy way. And then now I'm doing it, and Casey's going, dang, like, this feels really different. This feels good. And so it's like, when one person changes and starts to model that, the hope is that there's a positive impact. Yeah. But again, you got to have a timeline.
Systems change theory says that when you change one part of the system, the entire system changes. So that's why we go back to like,
it did.
If you want to make a better marriage, make a better you. You're changing the system.
I changed the system. I made changes for myself, and it pushed him away. I changed it right on out.
Yeah.
Like, if he got his way and I stopped doing what I was doing, and I didn't have the show and I didn't do speaking anymore that lights me up, he would be fine. There would be no more shaming me as a mom and all this stuff. So I know how to make things better in my relationship. And that's why I'm like, is it selfish that I am choosing what I want to do? And then kind of as a part of that, I see so many, it's sad how many women that I know of that are in divorce, going through divorces right now. All of us are in our early 40s. I believe that women don't really know who they are until their early 40s. So the 24-year-old girl that was like, I just want to be a stay-at-home mom. I should not be held to that. And I have apologized. I said, I didn't bait and switch you. I didn't know that this was coming. Mm-hmm. Can you
move into exactly who you are. And women find that at 40, and it's just not aligned anymore. Like, we were a match when I didn't have any desire to do anything, but now we're not. Like, is that a thing?
I'm going to say that some of those conversations are really, really hard to have on your own. And that's why it is helpful to have someone else in the room, because there may be pains that he's going through that he said to you that you've heard for the last 19 years, 18 years, that you're like, I hear that. There's the scripting. I heard it. Mm-hmm. But it no longer carries the emotional impact that he's trying to communicate. And the same thing for you is, I'm trying to change the script and he's hearing something else because it's you through the pain, you know, the painful glasses, right?
Yeah. Right.
And sometimes it's like in the intensives, it's both Megan and I sitting in the room, and it's interesting to be able to communicate, like Megan can communicate the wife message to the husband, but because she's saying it, right? How many times have you said something and then somebody else says the same thing and the light bulb goes on in his life and he's like, oh, and you're like, I've been telling you for years.
Yes.
It has everything to do with the messengers.
Yes. Messenger. It's not well received from me.
Yes. Which is because there's emotions, there's history, there's passion, there's fights all in those glasses. And then because he has resentment, he's seeing you through a different lens. I can almost guarantee your husband wants to have a good marriage. He loves you. He loves the kids. He's an avoider. He was not equipped. Yes. He's embarrassed. He has no clue how to even be vulnerable. So why even go there?
Yes.
He's probably numbing out to alcohol, social media, video gaming. I don't know. He's numbing out to something because he's bored and he doesn't have a career going on right now.
Yes.
If you were in a healthy place, I think he'd actually be your biggest cheerleader. I don't think it has anything to do with you having your career. I think there's a deeper issue there with him, and he doesn't even know how to like put it together, which is exactly like what a coach does, is that we are able to then communicate it and then go, is this what the issue is? And he'd be like, yes. And then we're able to problem solve and go, okay, let's talk about this. And I think that's where couples get so stuck, is just because you're stuck in your own hurt and you don't see it. And that's okay. Like, there's no, like, we've been there. There's no shame in saying like, I need help. You know, like, you would never want your kids to not raise their hand in school because they don't understand something, right? You'd be like, buddy, why didn't you just ask the teacher? Yes. Like, that's what they're there for. And I feel like we have so much shame around marriage problems. And I'm sure your husband feels very embarrassed. There is a lot. And I love that you share the same passion that we do. Like, there shouldn't be embarrassment. But this guy, it's taken him a long time to get to this place. He was raised where therapy, asking for help was bad.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I was raised opposite, where if you get stuck, you ask for help and there's no shame. And so it's now going like, it's taken him time. And he's like, oh my gosh. And now you're going to have me go in front of everybody and tell like our biggest marriage fights.
But look at him. It was he's really doing
hard
it
for you in the first few years. Oh my gosh. And now he's doing it. Like, I feel like even more than me, but that took a learning and humility.
I just want to say thank you so much, Aaron, because there are very few people that are willing to step up to the plate and say, this is what's going on. Especially in like an influencer driven culture where it's like, hey, everybody, we're on vacation in the Barbados.
I'm the opposite of an influencer. Yes.
And it's like,
that's what
these
it is.
Young influencer couples that have no kids and they're like, marriage is amazing. And you're like,
what?
That's my, I found my superpower is I can be vulnerable and authentic. It's not hard for me. And if it makes other couples or women feel seen and less alone, like that's what I do this. And he just is like, so pushing against it, but maybe there's healing that he needs to do. I know you guys need to go. If there's someone listening to this that is like, let me in there. I need Marriage 365. Where can they go to find out more? Sign up. Tell me all the things.
Yeah. So we're all over social media. Just type in Marriage 365. You can't miss us. And I also encourage you guys to go download our app in the App Store, Google Play App Store. And all of the tools and resources that we've used in healing our own marriage and coaching other couples that are doing well and looking for great ideas to improve their relationship, and coaching couples that are in crisis in affair recovery mode that are looking to rebuild trust in their relationship. All of that can be found inside of our app because it's full of videos, you know, courses, worksheets that are going to give you the action plans to restore hope in your relationship.
Yeah. And just so you know, Aaron, over 50% of the people who have our app are actually working on their marriage alone. So I just wanted, would want anyone listening that is working on their marriage alone to know that it's actually more common than you think it is. People just don't talk about it. We talk about it. You talk about it, which I love, but it is normal and it is hard. It's not easy. But at the end of the day, my therapist said, Megan, have you done everything and anything you can to save your marriage so you don't live with regret? And I wanted the answer to be yes. And when I met with her, my answer was no. I had not done everything. I had not apologized. I had not forgiven. I did not have boundaries. I did not follow through with consequences. I did not have great communication skills. I had to learn all that. And once you do, it is the most empowering and freeing and beautiful thing, no matter what happens in your marriage.
If you are not subscribed to Therapy with Aaron Washington, please hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this. Please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts so that more people can find it. And thank you for listening and being along on this journey with me. If you have any subjects that you want me to talk about, follow me on Instagram at I am Aaron Washington. Follow the show at Therapy with Aaron Washington. And I will see you next week for more Therapy.